You are listening to the Experience Points podcast for the week of February 13, 2020. And today we spider swing out of the past and into the future.
Welcome back, everybody. This is the Experience Points podcast. My name is Scott Juster.
And I'm George Albor.
We are the co-creators of ExperiencePoints.net. It is a serious but not humorless podcast about video games. And we're gearing up. The big video games have yet to arrive in 2020, but the big news keeps on rolling.
The hot scoops, fresh off the Daily Bugle presses.
they're a menace, those scoops. there was a few interesting news stories that came out earlier this week and just kind of in recent time, and so we decided that we just take a poke around and look at a few of those while we await the unholy alliance that is Doom and Animal Crossing,
and theoretically the PlayStation 4 console announcement, which I assume is going to happen sometime in the near future.
I mean, they're going to have to do it sometime.
I mean, maybe they won't. Maybe they'll just be like, you know what? On second thought, you can have this one, Xbox.
It'll just be like November 7th, and they'll be like, press the button.
That would be rad. I like that idea.
What do you want to talk about first?
Well, since we've laid the groundwork, I feel like we should talk about Spider-Man. The yes. Friendly neighborhood Spider-Man. Insomniac has been acquired by Sony for $229 million.
That's a lot of dollars, right?
I don't know. I was thinking about that earlier.
Yeah.
And like, well, you know, we know Spider-Man sold very well. It sold over 13 million copies, right? Okay. I imagine it costs a good chunk of change to make that game. But, you know, even on the pessimistic side, that brought in a good share of dollars, and then you figure there's going to be licensing deals and, you know, like mobile games, and there's the sequel, and Insomniac's been around for a very long time. You know, there's a lot of just institutional knowledge that you're acquiring.
Right.
$229 million seems pretty fair.
It's so interesting. I mean, I'm further away from it than you are, but like just even doing the back of the napkin math where I have to believe that a game the size and scope of, did they call it Marvel Spider-Man? What did they call that? The Amazing Spider-Man? I remember it had a kind of like very bare bones Spider-Man name.
I think it's Marvel's Spider-Man.
Marvel's,
not to be confused with someone else's Spider-Man.
Yeah. Not to be confused with Jeremy's Spider-Man.
Yes.
I mean, you got to believe that game costs tens of millions of dollars to make.
Yep.
But I mean, I guess you're right. Like if it then went on to sell tens of millions of copies, then that combined with any DLC and their other efficiencies that they can gain from maybe using other technology, I get it.
My question though is, what is the licensing agreement with Marvel? Like, how long do they have that for?
Because
also I was reading a Forbes article about this as well, and they rightly point out that a lot of the titles that we associate with Insomniac, like Spyro, is not owned by Insomniac, you know, and Sony already owns Resistance and Ratchet and Clank, which Insomniac made games for, but Sony already owned that IP.
Right.
So what they're getting from Insomniac is Sunset Overdrive.
Which, I mean, that was popular, right? I didn't play it, but
I don't know. I don't think I even knew anyone who played it. So I think it sold well.
I mean, I guess what they're getting then is they're locking in the talent of which it seems like Insomniac Games has plenty of into Sony.
Yeah, I mean, I hope that the folks at Insomniac are pleased by this, you know? I hope that the workers are pleased by it. They've had a close relationship with Sony for a very long time now anyway, so it kind of makes sense. It is a fat wad of cash. I hope it trickles down, you know?
I feel like Insomniac is one of the bigger developers that I don't have a huge amount of experience with. I mean, I have played Spyro, but never, I don't think I've ever finished a Spyro game. I don't think I've ever finished a Ratchet and Clank game, even though you know, those are all very popular. Same with Resistance. I don't know if I've ever finished an Insomniac game, now that I think about it.
I mean, I've certainly finished Spyro games before. And I finished the first Resistance. I never finished a Ratchet and Clank game. Right. I know there's a lot of fan appreciation for that series. Funnily enough, I've really enjoyed Ratchet and Clank speedruns. I think there was one at AGDQ like 2 years ago or something.
Weird.
Yeah. And there was a Marvel Spider-Man speedrun that was pretty interesting as well this year.
Huh.
But yeah, I mean, I don't know. Though they don't strike me really as a studio that I'm always interested in. At least they weren't until Spider-Man really knocked it out of the park. Yeah.
What do you know what they're working on now?
I would hope it'd be the next Spider-Man. I mean, honestly, I don't know, but I think based upon the success that Marvel Spider-Man achieved, they had to have moved all the resources towards the next one.
Right. That, yeah.
I mean, I'm sure they're working on other stuff. It's a pretty sizable studio, but I imagine that one is what the brunt of their workforce is on.
Yeah. I mean, it will be, and you have to imagine that whatever it is going to be a major centerpiece of the first year of the PlayStation 5.
Yes.
So to me, that's exciting. Where, I mean, I feel like there was, if you think back to the PS4 and Xbox One, the first year was actually a little bit slow. And there was a lot of chatter. What a weird world we live in. It wasn't, I mean, this is what, like 5 to 6 years ago, where the narrative around new consoles was, are people even ready for new consoles? Will they buy them? Like, is mobile gaming just going to eat it all? And then this has been one of the most successful console generations ever.
Yeah. Exactly.
And so they had to do this huge catch-up game where everyone was, you know, bringing out their games. And I think remakes got a big boost because people just needed to, just frantically get a game out onto these systems. So it's cool that it seems like this is, I am optimistic that the start will be quicker this time around. And this sort of move suggests that.
That's a very good point. And I'm kind of surprised we haven't heard more news, I guess. Did Spider-Man, did Sony pick up any other studios? Or Spider-Man, I guess.
I mean, he can pick up any sort of studios. He's a spider. I think, actually, no, it's just been Xbox. Because Xbox, bought Ninja Theory and all of those other acquisitions that they made.
Yeah, and Tim Schafer's studio. Yeah.
Do you think they bought Insomniac so they could have Spider-Man so that they could finally unify the font of the PlayStation brand and the original Spider-Man movie universe brand?
Absolutely. 100% that is the logic of why they did it.
The Tobey Maguire era of PlayStation font.
You know, wild idea, predicting the future, but I feel like I would actually wait and pick up a Spider-Man themed PS4.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that'd be pretty cool to have it like webbed out.
You mean PS5?
Yeah, PS5, excuse me. Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure they will do something like that. I'm pretty sure they did that with the PS4, so this just,
well, I saw the fucking Animal Crossing Switch, and I've never wanted to buy a second Switch more than when I saw that unit.
Looks pretty fresh.
So fresh.
Let's see, what else?
Speaking of freshness.
Yeah.
Let's talk about BioWare.
Yeah.
So there was a blog article that they put out, I think today as of the recording, that announced that they would be fundamentally changing the experience that is Anthem. The exact words they use are, we are going to work to reinvent the core gameplay loop with clear goals, motivating challenges, and progression with meaningful rewards. Essentially, they are scrapping a lot of their post-launch plans and saying, look, we need to go kind of back to the start and fundamentally change up what this game is offering. I feel like we have seen bungled starts for games many times in the past. I work at a company that has done it in the past, you know? It happens.
But you work at a company that has fixed it, though.
Right, but that's what I was going to say, is I don't think that I have seen very many instances where it is so heavily implied that they're just, like, really hitting the reset button, you know?
Yeah.
Like, there's one thing to say, we're going to be making regular improvements, and this next improvement is this huge, big thing. it's really interesting to me to say something like reinventing the core gameplay loop. That is like, you know, that is round number one in the fight that is even making your game, you know?
Yes.
Like, yeah. Understanding, I mean, that's what the makes the
basic level
fun.
Of a game.
Right. So reinventing it strikes me as quite radical.
I guess I'm just trying to work through this. So at that point, when you say we're going to reinvent the core gameplay loop, clear goals, motivating challenges, progression with meaningful rewards,
yep.
What you're saying is we made a bad game.
Yes.
And we're going to make it better. But what is the point of, I mean, does the brand of Anthem have such cachet that it's worth saving versus just making a new game?
That was my big question, right? Like, what do you do here? Because this, I think, is about as far as you can go without just saying, like, wrap it up, folks, you know?
Yeah.
Because here's the thing, right? Like, we know what the normal route would be at this point in a normal game launch cycle, right? You would say, all right, we failed to hit that target audience. You know, maybe this is something that would have happened 5-10 years ago.
Yeah.
But, you know, we do have a small fan base. We'll continue to make minor improvements, but we'll slowly start winding down our development resources. We'll move developers away onto other projects. We'll try to keep it pretty bare bones and continue to support the fans that want to play this game and, most importantly, want to spend money in the game. So we'll try our best to monetize and recoup what losses we can. But for the most part, we're taking the large section of the development studio and moving it onto another project.
Right.
This could be that, and they're just kind of hiding it, right? Because they did say that they are delaying some of the major post-launch content that had already been planned, right?
Mm-hmm.
And instead focusing on just some of the, you know, the smaller events, but they're essentially telling all of the people who are actively playing, don't expect anything big from us because we're going to be focused on like a major gameplay change. So maybe they're moving resources around strategically and this isn't as big of a deal as this seems to imply. Or they're doing something very different that I don't think I've seen, which is to say, actually, let's double down on this. Maybe the systems are good enough. You know, maybe they're like, look, we rushed this game out and what this game really needed was 6 more months. What does it look like to give a game 6 more months a year after its release?
Yeah, 18 more months.
Right?
I mean, you played a little bit of it. I have the recollection of thinking that the flying looked cool.
Flying looked really cool. Yeah.
What is it? I mean, as a lapsed/never hit Anthem player, what could they do anything to get you back in?
I mean, honestly, this has got me more interested than anything else because if they really make some sort of radical change, then I would give it another look. I pre-ordered Anthem and ended up canceling my pre-order after the beta because it seemed like it was so far from providing something that wasn't just meat sponges and rinse, wash, repeat, almost like a subpar version of Destiny.
Yeah.
But let's say that they fundamentally revamped how all of the classes worked in Anthem and they had a whole new main quest line and new monsters or something, right? Like if there was a genuinely radical change, let's say they even added a whole new environment. They added like a public hub that was different. Like let's almost say as though they dropped an expansion. That could get me interested again. If I felt that, hey, something has fundamentally changed. It's really difficult for me to imagine how that is possible, though, right? Like, how do you really fundamentally change it without scrapping it all, right? Right? We've all heard crazy horror stories about the complicated morass that is development code and how it just becomes this sinking hole where you start patching one thing after another and things were built early in the development lifecycle that are the building blocks for this thing, but you can't change the old thing, therefore you can't change the new thing, right?
Yeah.
We've also gotten the inside story investigative pieces about what happened at BioWare with Anthem in particular.
Right.
And even something like flying, which they say they want to preserve, was something that was in the game and then out of the game, and then in the game and then out of the game, like was such this fundamental back and forth that I think was the cause of some of the issues that the game eventually had. So again, I don't have, with all of that stuff and knowing we're going to keep flying in the game and we're going to preserve mm-hmm. that. What could you do? I don't know. I have no idea. I am counting me interested, but not optimistic.
Do you recall if they did any of the storytelling stuff? Because I feel like that's the thing that really sets BioWare stuff apart, but that's one of the hardest things to do in a live game.
No, I don't think they did, unless there were some significant changes after launch. I mean, they had good voice acting, but they certainly didn't have the sort of world building that you might expect from a BioWare experience.
I wonder if that's something. I mean, if they could, if they're going to redo the gameplay loop and the challenges and all that stuff, I mean, maybe it's like, well, the loot shooter is perhaps not our forte, but a more traditional, you know, run-based or challenge-based thing could be different if we put, you know, if we handled it like the Star Wars MMO, which apparently by all accounts had a good story and they were able to run that for, you know, quite some time.
Yeah.
It just seems very strange to reboot a thing that I question how many people actually have a emotional attachment to this thing because it just never got off the ground.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like their primary focus is mostly gameplay related.
Yeah.
You know, like, if they're going to be changing fundamentals and the core gameplay loop, they said that there's a dedicated team that's going to be iterating and testing and making sure things aren't, like, buggy.
Yeah.
That sounds like it's mostly gameplay focused. I don't know if they can really invest that much more in story stuff.
How likely is it that the revamped version of Anthem we'll have a battle royale
mode? I was just about to say. I mean, honestly, that's a great question. I mean, yeah, the battle royale like might be a bit of a tongue-in-cheek joke, but I think if they want to bring back players, having a multiplayer loop that is incredibly satisfying is one way of doing that, and can be built in a silo and can be excluded from the main experience without being bogged down by it. You know, you can balance gameplay around PvP. You can create new arenas around PvP without committing them into this open world experience. Yeah, I mean, I think that could be a very real possibility.
I mean, and if you're BioWare, what if you take a BioWare-like tactic on the Battle Royale mode? What if you have a Battle Royale mode and it's still PvP, but it plays out over a long-term thing with story in it? Where
that would be cool.
You know, a battle royale that takes a week or a month to complete because every player has to make it to the, you know, center of the arena or something like that.
I mean, look, Scott, you and I have a long history of inventing really awesome battle royale ideas. You know, the giant mecha one, the right. fucking the car one, the my personal favorite, the one where you're hunting a Sasquatch through the forest. All of these things are great battle royale ideas, and yet no one is building them. So I don't
those
think
cowards.
Those fucking cowards. I don't think BioWare got my letters, or they're not responding to them. I'm not optimistic that they'll finally build my what are they called? The zoological creatures that are like mythic.
You mean like the Jersey Devil and
yes,
all of the
yeah. yeah. What are those things called?
I don't know. I know exactly what you're talking about. The it's like that museum in LA where it's like the auditorium of, you know, fake animals or something
yes,
like that.
Yeah, that's a great
you want the chupacabra
museum.
In there. You want everything. Like
yeah, dude, the battle royale where like one person is the chupacabra and everyone is hunting them. Oh, sign me up.
So before we talk about Flash stuff, I want to touch on the Animal Crossing Switch thing because it brings up a kind of a ancillary question. So I agree with you. The Animal Crossing Joy-Cons and dock just look so fresh and clean. It looks looks like a minty paradise, basically, of just island theme. It just looks great.
Yep.
Have you invested at all in pure aesthetic Joy-Con choices?
Yes, I own the Squid Kid Splatoon controllers.
But do you have another set that came with the console, or was that your console stock?
No, I have another set that came with the console that I never use because they're not as fresh. And okay. I've gotten compliments on public transportation by people who twice where they were like, whoa, nice Joy-Cons. What kind
and
of those?
You're like, stay fresh.
Yeah, it's super cool.
I was thinking about that because when we got our, we're a two Switch household now. Your check is in the mail. Well, you already have our money, Nintendo. Mm-hmm. But and the Joy-Cons I have are just because I needed to distinguish them from the other ones. I now just have the gray ones. And so I was like, oh, maybe I can get these Animal Crossing ones, the sleek, cool blue and gray. And I was trying to justify that to myself, but I don't know. Are those things still super expensive?
The Joy-Cons? Yeah, dude. Yeah. They're like, I mean, I think they're at least $40, right? How much are good Joy-Cons? Lord. Joy-Cons. $69. What?
For a pair?
Enough charging. Yeah. Let's see. Neon red, neon blue, $70 on Amazon. The good fuck? Lord.
Nintendo really knows. They really have us.
I mean, and I saw a sheet that was every combination of the Joy-Cons that you can possibly have, and it's like huge, you know?
I just want to... I want a Batman-like wall of Joy-Cons where I can just choose my specific uniform for them.
I mean, honestly, yes. I know that there is a market, a secondhand... Not secondhand, I guess. There's a market for people on like Etsy to create custom skins that you can put on your Joy-Cons. I'm just not... I just don't want to end up scraping fucking glue off my Joy-Cons in a month, so...
Well, those things are already so finicky where I've seen some tutorials of, here's how you replace the D-pad and you can make it a better one, or you can, you know, install better sticks so that there's more throw on them instead of those, you know, the squat kind or whatever.
Yep.
And it just, I get so tempted because those things are a little bit fragile, but there's just so many tiny little ribbons in there and instantly I feel like I would lose a screw or something. I don't know. I haven't pulled the trigger on any of that stuff. Dude, and so therefore it pushes me more towards the fashion purchase of just getting a cool looking Joy-Con.
I mean, at that point they're so expensive. Like these purple, this neon purple and neon orange set, $78.39. Just buy the Animal Crossing Switch. It's like twice as much, you know, and you get a whole new console.
And you get a brand new Switch.
It's crazy.
All right. Looking forward to that game.
Flash games.
Okay, so the one bad thing about Adobe ending support for Flash,
yes,
is that it's going to be more difficult to play and or preserve historically significant Flash games.
Yeah, I mean, this is basically a continuation of our conversation from last week.
Yeah.
But now, not even the digital games are safe.
They're not even safe.
Side note, we got a good email from Lundstrom or Simon about this subject, who made a good defense, by the way, of purchasing actual physical games. So hats off to you. But yeah.
I'm hoarding them now. Thank you.
Okay, do me a favor. Explain to me. My understanding is that Flash, besides being a cool place to build and play video games, was garbage and insecure. Can you explain to me, like, what is Flash? Why did the internet run on it for a while, and why does it not run on it anymore?
I am not hugely knowledgeable about this, but
damn it, Scott.
To your point, it was a pretty early technology. I mean, I think it's been around since the 90s for sure. Mm-hmm. It was a nice middle ground between people who were fairly hardcore and people that wanted to do more visually oriented programs, in a world where we ran more executable scripts on the client side of computers. Mm-hmm. So like when you were on a website, you know, Flash would be running to like actually run something from the internet on your computer in the background. But that opened it up to just a host of vulnerabilities because you are actually running actual software versus just, you know, rendering something in a web browser. And so it immediately is compromised. I mean, people criticize Adobe for how they made it and how they updated it. And also just generally like the weird business deals that they've done. I mean, it was a part of the early internet that survived a shockingly long time with that amount of baggage.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, I mean, you know.
But, we got a lot of cool stuff from it.
And everything has an end, you know. This also had to end.
Yeah. And I think, you know, this has been coming for a long time. I mean, this was years ago. One of the big turning points was when Apple refused to allow Flash to run on Safari on iPhones.
That's right. Yeah, I remember that.
Which, I mean, for whatever, however you feel about Apple and its various quote-unquote brave choices, I mean, I don't disagree with it. I mean, Flash was never very well optimized, especially on a device that lives or dies by its battery. And so that sort of, that was the start of the long demise of Flash. And yeah, we're finally at this point where Adobe is like, okay, this is it. We're not supporting this anymore.
It is an interesting, like, historical moment, right? Because Flash was so prolific across the internet and was also a tool to build games that there was this sort of universal opening. And, you know, you and I will think of websites like Kongregate, where we would play Flash games in college to, like, distract ourselves from, like, a boring lecture or something. There was a plethora of games to play, and the vast majority of them, let's be honest, are total garbage. And and to be fair, that's fine too, because some of them were experimental games that, you know, people developed on their own just for funsies to try to test it out. But I think you make a good point. Like, there are some gems, if you will.
Well, and I think, you know, just like rattling off a few of the games that we appreciated from the Flash era. I mean, to your, you mentioned it earlier, but, It's hard to imagine that something like Kongregate was so huge in, I would say, I don't know, mid-2000s, and now it just, it's not in the zeitgeist anymore. I guess maybe something like, you know, Itch or something has filled that gap, but it's crazy to look at how much that dominated the independent and online game space, and how much that has actually shifted towards app based stuff and mobile and a bunch of other things. But I mean, the original Meat Boy was a Flash game.
I also, speaking of gems, I didn't realize until I was doing some cursory Google searching, but Bejeweled was originally a Flash game.
Bejeweled,
which is like, what? Like, all mobile games are basically Bejeweled, right? So
I know. Yeah. I mean, they're Bejeweled plus microtransactions.
Yeah.
There is the N series that
I was just about to say that, N plus. Yeah.
The line, remember Line Rider?
Line Rider and Desktop Tower Defense was another one that I played a lot of.
And I mean, that was an early, I mean, there were these genre defining games that came out of the Flash scene, like Desktop Tower Defense, or Cannon Bolt. I remember was in the whole Endless Runner thing was oh, very Cannon much Bolt. A Flash.
Another one that I only remembered when I saw it, Realm of the Mad God. Do you remember that one?
I do.
It's like an MMO. Yeah. I think we talked about it on the podcast like a decade ago or something crazy. That game was really cool. I mean, because I'd never played a top-down MMO that I can play in my browser, you know? It's super cool.
I think, and then I think Super Meat Boy is a good example of this, but there's a group of game designers who have gone on to become the independent darlings and authorities in the space and just large voices in the space, you know, Terry Kavanaugh or Bennett Foddy or any of those folks. I mean, Quap was a Flash game originally. So it's just all of that stuff has had an outsized impact on what we think about independent games and just smaller scale games now, and a democratized tool like Flash gave rise to a lot of cool things that we're still reaping the benefits of today.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I think identifying itch.io as a platform where that's still happening is a good one. There are a lot more accessible tools for game developers to cut their teeth on and learn than there ever have been before. And so Flash was really cool because you could make something and it was immediately accessible to anyone with the browser. And at that time, when people didn't have, you know, powerful computers, or phones that could run things as advanced as, like, I don't know, what is the fucking craziest shit on your phone now? Probably you could probably run The Witcher on your phone at this point, right? Like, right. there's quite a bit of options now in terms of distributing those. I think it's certainly hard, but I think it was hard then as well. So
yeah,
it feels like it's carried on in other things. I don't know how many great Flash games have made within the past year, for example. Right. Maybe there's right. one or two. Maybe I'm just not paying attention, but it certainly feels like
it existed in a world before things like Game Maker and Unity. Yep. I think a lot of that stuff was built on, hey, we did all of this very cool work with Flash. What would a game design specific piece of software that learned some of these lessons look like? And I think I am not a programmer, so someone can correct me, but I think we have a lot. There's probably a lot of credit that goes to Flash for opening that up and then inspiring more purpose-built tools that can make even more impressive games at the same scale. And, you know, that was the first of that wave of software.
You know what I'll never forget about Flash? That moment of fear whenever you go to a Flash website where you're like, do I need to download Flash again, or is this a virus?
Yes. Yeah. What sort of security patch ridden, you know, holes in my, you know, browser history? Like, what am I installing here? Is this an actual download, or is it just some fake image that's going to install some malicious script on my machine? Yeah, those are some times where you need to be a hardy pioneer on the internet.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, you know,
I ruined many a Windows image downloading stupid things.
Also, hats off to all the people working now, I guess, to preserve some of these games. There's so fucking many of them that I am not envious of that task.
One I found before we started talking was, there's this website. I have not downloaded this yet, so don't construe it as a endorsement, but I think I probably will try it out. There's a website called bluemaxima.org, and they have made an application called Flashpoint, which is hilarious.
Sweet.
And you can either download, it's a client basically. It looks a lot like Steam, and it has tens of thousands of Flash games on it, archived basically, so you can run them locally and you don't have to worry about updating or finding the most recent version. It's all packaged in the same piece of software. You can either download the full package, which is 241 gigabytes.
Holy cow.
Or you can download the client and then basically download the games as you play them. So you don't have to download the whole set. You just download them on demand when you click on them. But I think that's pretty cool, because all of a sudden you've basically, I don't know, of course, archive.org has done some of this preservation, and you can play a lot of those things in the browser at archive.org. So I think there is a move to transfer some of the Flash stuff to HTML5, which is probably going to be a more durable thing going forward. But I think it's cool that this has, in a weird way, sometimes a crisis sparks a movement like this.
Yep.
And it's actually a good thing that, you know, for the preservationist aspect.
And for people to, you know, learn what those games are and give them a shot. Frog Fractions, go play it. It's a Flash game.
Oh my gosh. I mean, yeah, I would say Frog Fractions must be what, the greatest, the pinnacle of Flash games.
I mean, that has to be, yeah, that is the moment it jumped the shark and then became the shark in midair.
Yeah, it's cool. I mean, it's a little piece of, I'm not sad to see Flash go, because there was a time and a place. It's inspiring to see that this has resurfaced a few of the games that I think are pretty seminal for what we think of as popular games and popular ways of approaching games. And it seems like there's a big push to preserve now, which is a good thing, and we won't actually miss out that much.
Yeah. Cool.
I can't wait till I teach Sam how to play Quap.
Oh man, what a great game. Although it's, I think it's truly meant to be played on those enormous Nintendo pads.
Yeah. Oh, right. So we need to go to we need to go to some sort of like thrift store or something like that and find one of those old power pads.
Yeah, you won't be able to go to Babbage's or whatever anymore. Or GameStop, apparently, either.
You must get at least 25 meters before I allow you to play Fortnite.
Yeah, dude, that'd be great. It's good exercise, I'm sure.
Bad for your blood pressure.
Bad for your blood pressure.
All right. Well, those are some of the recent news stories. I now have this notion that I'm going to download this thing and just stroll down memory lane of all these Flash games. So I think I'm just going to lose myself in that for a while.
Can you play on your phone?
I don't know if they've made an app out of that. I think it would be hard because Flash is kind of hard to get on a phone.
That's true. That would be interesting, though. I just want to play all of these games on the go, you know?
I mean, what you probably are going to get into is like some sort of like side-loaded Nintendo Switch, you know, hack or something
that
installs all this stuff on it. But
well, I mean, at least I don't have to download Flash.
experiencepoints@gmail.com is our email address.
And experiencepoints.net is the website. You can find an archive of all of our podcasts wherever podcasts are sold. Stitcher.
Spotify,
iTunes. We're there.
All right. Until next time, everybody, thank you so much for listening. We will talk to you next week.
Ciao.